You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I hope you've all enjoyed your Easter vacation. I certainly did, caught up on my sleep, and went out and actually bought a chair. I needed a comfortable chair for hopefully a desk or a table in the near future. So I put that together. That was a little bit challenging, but believe it or not, I took a chair out of the box and put it all together, an accomplishment. I'm sure you've had more eventful things, but I also did a lot of reading. And what's hard is we weren't on the air Friday because the campus was closed, nor was the campus open either Saturday or Sunday. And because of that, I've gotten behind in my production. I hate it because I normally want the show that I do, for example, today, to be posted no later than 10 or 11 o'clock that evening. And usually that's what happens, except when they close everything down, which is exactly what they did. So I have not had an opportunity to complete the post-production editing of the Thursday show, and hopefully tonight I'll get both this show and Thursday show done. I wanted to pick up, though, on where I left off last Thursday with giving you a more complete update of what happened in Brussels. And I knew this was going to happen. It was just a matter of time. The original death count was a total of 34 people, and that includes the three bombers. So you had 31. That's been increased by 4 people. Remember, we had 270 people injured, many of them severely burned, as well as shrapnel wounds. Well, 4 of them have died. So the total victims of both the subway and the airport bombing is now 35. 4 have been identified as American citizens, one was a couple. I'll give you more complete information as it comes out. We are starting to get the names of the people that were killed and their backgrounds. I was reading a story, I believe it was from a Brussels paper, giving some of the background. It was Deseret News, and you can go online and read it. I really suggest that's what you do, is see the backgrounds of these various people. Some were old, some were young, and I think we'll learn more in the coming days, and the backgrounds of these people that were really going about living their lives, trying to catch a plane or picking up someone, and their lives were tragically cut short, and they will be missed, and my prayers and sympathies go out to the families and friends of all the victims of this tragedy in Brussels, Belgium last week. Now, what should the United States and Europe do about this? And that will be an issue in the presidential campaign. One of the problems, and it's really turned into a big problem for Europe, is for many years they had more or less open borders. And one of the reasons they were trying to get more immigrants to come to many of these nations in Europe is simply you have declining birth rates of the native population. To replace your current generations, the people living today, you need couples that have 2.1 children. That's the magic number in terms of just keeping even or keeping up with, you know, people die every year. So to have a constant population number, you need to replace the deaths with births, and that requires a birth rate of 2.1. Well, in many of the European countries, it's 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. It's way, way, way below that replacement rate, and because of that, the population gets older and older and older. And you have fewer and fewer young people and fewer workers. So to replace those workers, Europe in general, including the United Kingdom, but also Spain, Italy, France, Germany, and other countries, have encouraged immigration to their country. And by not really vetting these people and encouraging and assimilating these people, what you've had is a large percentage of these immigrants have been Muslims that have stayed in neighborhoods, enclaves. They used to be called ghettos, and they have not assimilated. In other words, they brought their culture, society, religion, language with them, and while they might be in France, they might be in Belgium, United Kingdom, in various cities, the Netherlands, they don't assimilate. And what happens is the young of these immigrants feel alienated from the general society because of the lack of assimilation, and that's where radicals are bred. And they either turn to crime or turn to terrorism, where religion is used as a justification for their actions. Many of them were attracted to the Islamic State and actually went to Syria to fight for the Islamic State in Syria. Now, many of them are returning and committing terrorist acts and trying to get others involved in it. That is the challenge that Europe faces. Combine that with Europe not spending anywhere near what the United States spends in terms of its gross national product, the percentage of it. Most of your European countries are spending a fraction of what the United States spends. Now, to be perfectly candid, the United States spends about half, a little over half, in terms of military spending, is the United States. Europe, Japan, and other countries have, in terms of strictly a percentage of their total output, 1-2%, sometimes a little higher than that, versus 3-4% for the United States. Donald Trump has made this somewhat of an issue by asking the question that should have been asked a long time ago: is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, obsolete? I think it is. You see, what's happened is the United States is the country these countries call when they get into trouble. And as a result, the people of the United States, the taxpayers of the United States, are paying the bills. The time is long past where Europe in particular has to spend more money on its military. And I support Donald Trump in this. I think we should withdraw from NATO. What's the point? NATO was founded to deter aggression by the Soviet Union. Well, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. Russia, why it still has nuclear weapons and is a military force and spends money on it, they have the same population problem combined with an alcoholic problem. They are shrinking as a world power. It gets back to the problem of replacing your population. We're not even talking growing the population. I'm just saying keeping the population that you have. And the challenge is, if you invite Muslims into your country, they tend to have birth rates of over 3-4, some cases even higher. 3-4, though, is fairly typical. To compare that with less than 2, usually 1.2, 3, or 4, in countries like Italy, Spain, Netherlands. But Russia has just as bad a problem. So demographics is a critical factor here, and it does impact the society when you encourage large numbers, and that's exactly what's happening today. The two countries that where you have a lot of refugees from, there are two countries primarily, Syria, which is in the news, as well as Afghanistan. And countries like Australia have tried to stop that. They put out a movie that's playing in Pakistan to discourage people from trying to reach Australia, because they'll send you back. They don't want the headaches. Now, I bring this up because I think immigration is going to be the wedge issue of this coming election. And we have rather a stark contrast between the Democratic Party under Hillary Clinton, and again, I assume she's going to get the nomination. I don't think she's going to win, though. The Democratic Party and the media, and remember, I need to say something because a lot of people put a lot of stock to the polls. You have the major, big, what I call now big media, primarily the television networks combined with some of your leading papers such as the Washington Post, put out polls. You got to be very, very careful of the polls, even if you can get the information as to what questions were asked, what order of the questions, the number of people they asked it to, what are the characteristics, are they just voters or just 500 people they've called? You need to be very sensitive to the number, otherwise it's going to have a very high error rate. But something else that you need to be very careful of is the mix in terms of who they're polling. Have they overweighted the poll and put more Democrats in the mix? I'm saying this because I'm leading up to something. You hear a lot of polls right now that if Donald Trump is the Republican nominee for president, in other words, he's at the top of the ticket, and he's running against Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton is going to beat him going away. I don't believe those polls for a minute. I strongly suspect a couple of things. One, they're overweighted towards Democrats. It depends on the questions they've asked. It's way too soon to really do this because we haven't had the convention. Neither the Republican Party or the Democratic Party have nominated anyone. And yes, I know that Hillary Clinton has a big lead, and the reason she has a big lead is the superdelegates. She has, last time I looked, I think it was 485 superdelegates. That's why she has a big lead over Bernie Sanders. If you take those out, it's a close race. And Bernie Sanders just won Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington. Now, I don't think Bernie Sanders for a moment is going to get the nomination, but it's not necessarily a slam dunk for her. And I know in Texas, and there's a little danger of extending this to the general election, but I've heard anecdotal comments from a number of sources, but especially in Texas, because we had ours the first. What was happening is this. At the polls, the lines for the Republican primaries were long. The lines for the Democratic were short or non-existent. What I'm getting out is turnout. A number of comments, they were afraid they were going to run out of ballots for the Republican part of the primary. No problem with the Democrat. Now, I quickly need to point out, Texas is primarily a Republican state. I think your only area where you have a higher concentration of Democrats would be far south Texas along the U.S.-Mexican border. But other than that, Texas is generally today a Republican state. Now, that was not the case, for example, in 1960, 1964. Texas, as well as most of the South then, were Democrats. Today, most of the South, including Texas, are Republicans. You had in the 70s an exodus, a mass exodus from the Democratic Party when it turned left under George McGovern. Now, I'm giving you this history for a reason. This election, like all elections, but this election in particular, will very much depend on voter turnout. They all depend on voter turnout. But what's going on? It looks like the Republican base is very much motivated to turn out for their candidate, whoever that candidate is. Now, in Texas, it's Ted Cruz, and coming in second is Donald Trump. In other states, it's the reverse. It's Donald Trump that's way ahead, and Ted Cruz is a distant second. But no matter what the state, the Republican turnout is much significantly higher. Now, why? What's going on here? You have Democrats that are leaving the Democratic Party. And I've been saying this for many, many years. The big secret of both parties is the fact that people are leaving. They're disgusted with the political elite that's running the parties, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. And that's what's going on. That's the popularity of Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders is attracting the far left in this country, the communists, the socialists, as well as the very young that frankly don't know what those two words mean and don't have a clue, but they like Bernie. So Bernie is attracting people. Now, the other thing that you need to factor in, that many college students today, when they graduate, have a large, large debt they've run up. I think it's a mistake because I see what passes for higher education today, and I'd be honest, I wouldn't pay for it. And some people go to the more elite schools, your Ivy League schools, some of the top 20, the best universities in the United States. I've gone to two of them, so I know a little about what I'm talking about. When I went to them, they weren't cheap, but they were nowhere near as expensive as they are today. And I had a scholarship, but I had to take out loans, and it took me a couple of years to pay them off, but nowhere near the dollars. We're talking tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the government now is running that program, and the government is going after people. And the problem is a lot of students are waking up to the fact that they majored in something that really has little or no relevance in terms of getting a job. So they have two problems. One, they're saddled with a large debt that the government is banging on the door, wanting them to pay. And the fact that they've majored in something that has little market value. That's a problem. So what do? They are attracted to Bernie Sanders. Wants to have free public college education. Well, that's nice, Bernie, but who's paying for it? You and I are paying for it. And that has been the playbook of the Democratic Party. I call it Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you stuff. Now, Bernie, vote for me and I'll give you a free college education. Sounds good, doesn't it? If you get a good paying job, you'll be paying taxes to pay for someone else's education. You see, there's no such thing as a free education or a government paid education. Taxpayers pay for it, and that's why today, at all levels, if you add it up, about half of your paycheck goes to the government one way or the other. Either the federal government in terms of personal income taxes, Social Security taxes, as well as the state government and the county and the city. Government spending is out of control at all levels. And that is really the core problem. Until we have a third party that's going to stop both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party from spending your money, which means taxing you, and they've gone beyond taxing you. They're now spending future generations' money by borrowing and printing money. There are three ways to pay for government. One, and the best way, is taxes. The second is to borrow. And we've done that. That's why the national debt by next January will be over $20 trillion. The third way is to actually print money, and that's a tax on you because you'll see it in increased prices called inflation. That is decreasing the value of the money you have, the notes you have in your wallet, Federal Reserve notes. So the federal government, states can't do this, but the federal government is using all three. What that means, ladies and gentlemen, that our government is simply too big. I'm very much an advocate of limited government. That's why I'm not happy with either the Democratic or Republican Party. They're both big government parties, and they're dominated by lawyers. They also, to stay in office, need big money from the donor class, so they sell themselves. They're corrupted. Not all of them, but most of them. And usually your incumbents, somewhere between 90 and 95%, routinely get reelected. So they know how the game's played, they know how to play the game, and many of them can talk conservative, but if you actually see what they do in terms of spending, your money, not their money, your money, they're really laughing at you. And the people are waking up to this. The students are waking up because they graduate from college having $25,000, $50,000, some cases over $100,000 in debt. They go out looking for a job, thinking because now I'm a college graduate, I'm worth a lot, and find out, no, they either can't find a job, or if they can, it's part-time. And the few that do get good-paying jobs, for the first 5, 10, 15 years, what are they doing? They're paying off those college loans. Many of them postpone marriage. And as a result, recently, the birth rate replacement, the birth rate in the United States fell below 2, which the replacement rate is 2.1. So slowly but surely, we're becoming Europe, and I don't want to become Europe. Europe has a declining population. The only thing that's offsetting it is mass migration, with a large portion of that mass migration being Muslims that have much higher birth rates than your Europeans, natives. And what happens is, over two generations, a generation is roughly 18 to 20 years. Within two generations, roughly by about 2050, you're going to see the percentage of Muslims be 10, 20, 30% of the total population. And as that continues, they become a majority. That is what happens when you don't look at the inescapable consequences of a welfare state where taxes in Europe are much, much higher, even though we complain here about corporate income taxes being high, and they are. Because of the cradle-to-grave socialism or welfare statism of Europe, when you add all the taxes up there, you're 50, 60, 70%. And when you have a declining population because they're not replacing their numbers, the great temptation is to encourage immigration. Again, where do they come from? North Africa, the Middle East, some movement within the European Union. But it's a downward spiral. I don't want that to happen to the United States. That's why I have, in many programs, and I will continue to do this until it stops, I'm not for open borders. I'm not. I'm opposed to it. But who favors it? The people that want cheap, compliant labor. That's employers, primarily businesses, but also governments, colleges. I walked on the campus today, didn't run into him, but he was going out, I was coming in. There's a subcontractor that we use to clean the facilities here at Richland College. I would roughly estimate that 90% of them are Mexican, and most, if not all, are illegals. Now, the school will say, well, excuse me, we don't hire illegals. We hire a subcontractor to clean the buildings, the men's rooms, clean out the waste baskets. Now, this has been going on for many years. Why does the DCCD, including Richland College, do this? To save money. That's what's going on. They want cheap, compliant labor. And these people do work hard, do a good job. I'm not blaming them. I'm blaming our representatives for allowing this to go on. And because it's been going on for 15 to 20 years, we now have at least 30 to 50 million illegals here. Europe has a big problem, but the United States also has a problem. I don't want the United States and the various offices become more corrupt. They're already corrupt, but I don't want to become like Mexico corrupt. And that's what's slowly happening. And the Washington elites are pushing back. They're pushing back on the American people, the American worker. That's who they're pushing back against, the people that elected them. What am I talking about? If you listen to past shows, you know I've had 4 candidates, now down to 1, that I could vote for. And I probably make it 2 as of today. Ted Cruz right now is the only candidate that I could vote for. However, it looks like Ted Cruz is not going to get the nomination. Why? Because Donald Trump has a significant lead in terms of delegates. And I don't see how Ted Cruz is going to close that gap. Unless Ted Cruz has some magic formula that he's going to pull out of you know where and do that. So I don't think it's very likely that Ted Cruz is going to get the nomination for president. Donald Trump in the past has been on my list. He went off the list mainly because I'm not totally trusting him in the area of immigration. Donald Trump has made immigration the issue of this campaign. And both political parties do not want to make immigration the issue. The Democratic Party is for open borders. They don't care how you get here. Just get here and we'll put you on a pathway to citizenship. The American people, as opposed to the two political parties, want immigration laws enforced because they know either themselves, their immediate family, friends, relatives are competing with the illegals that are here. The United States population is approximately 320 million. Of those 320 million, the size of the United States workforce, roughly, I'm giving you a ballpark here, is about 160 million people. We have 30 to 50 million illegals here. Now, many of them are children. Many of them are stay-at-home wives. Or if they stay at home, they work part-time anyway. So you have probably 25 million to 35 million illegals working here. Ladies and gentlemen, that's almost 20% of the workforce. It's over 10% of the workforce, that's for sure. That is a lot of people to compete with, and that has been going on largely for the last 15 years. Objectively, you could take it back to the very late 80s, but it really picked up during the George W. Bush administration, Sonny Bush, who lives in Dallas, by the way, as well as Barack Obama. That's when it noticeably changed. You can actually see it, and I saw it where I live. I see it where I live today in Dallas. And I've been in Dallas since 1984. I've been here quite a while, and I've seen entire neighborhoods change. And I've seen the influx of illegals here. And how do I know? Well, I look at them, and they all seem to talk Spanish. Not all of them, but most of them. And I've been called gringo several times. Now, I'm not against, as a matter of fact, I favor immigration as long as it's limited and controlled. I don't at all agree with our immigration policy as it stands now. The problem is the federal government has primary responsibility for enforcing immigration law, and they're not doing it. So we have a flood, an invasion of illegals, and that is causing a security problem, as well as a jobs problem, and a crime problem, and a drugs problem. So the American people are leaving the Democratic Party for many reasons, one being they don't deliver. The economy is on the verge of another recession. I was looking at preliminary estimates from a number of organizations as to what the first quarter growth will be, and the estimates are about 0.5, 0.6%. Zero or less is negative growth in real GDP. We're very close to going into negative growth. We'll be getting the revised figures, actually the final estimate for fourth quarter GDP, I believe this Thursday, and we'll find out whether it's 1.1, 1.4, 1.5. I don't think it's going to move much. The fourth quarter was 1.4. 1.4 is not good. The average growth rate over like five decades of the U.S. economy is about 3.5%. Depending on when you start and end, usually you'll see a range of estimates between about 3.1 to 3.5. That is the so-called trend line. So we're growing at a rate significantly below that trend line. We are somewhat overdue for another recession. Profits are down for many, many companies. So increasingly, it looks like sometime this year we will go into a recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth in the real gross domestic product, which is the sale of final goods and services to the economy. Why? You'll get a lot of reasons, but what has been the trend in government spending for the last 15 years? It's out of control. We've run deficits after deficits after deficits. Combine that with illegal immigration from 3 to 5 million per year for 15 years. That keeps wages and salaries down. That's why businesses and employers, including colleges where I'm sitting, employ illegals. Now, many of them, one of the games played is you hire a subcontractor or you hire an agency, and they have the responsibility. But everyone knows what's going on. The illegals come here. They don't present their papers for inspection. That's a misdemeanor. Then they go get fraudulent documents, driver's license, Social Security card. Then they go to employers, including agencies, contractors, show them the documents, and then they're hired. They've committed at least three crimes, last one being a felony. They don't have legal status to work here. So what we're engaged in, businesses are not hiring American citizens the way they should be. What they're hiring is illegals, and they're getting away with it. And the worst are sanctuary cities, and I'm in a sanctuary city. Ultimately, what happens is when you're in this type of situation, eventually the United States federal government is going to default on its debt, technically default. Oh, they're going to pay the principal and interest. But the principal and interest that you get back, if you're foolish enough to invest in U.S. Treasury securities, will be worth a lot less. And when that happens, investors insist that the yields or the interest rate that they get on their investments increase. Up to now, we have not seen that because what we've had is what's called financial repression by the Central Bank of the United States, namely the Federal Reserve System. Those are not market rates that the Treasury is paying. The Treasury, as well as the Fed, can get away with that as long as foreigners pick up the slack. But what's happening, the central banks of other countries are now deciding that, well, wait a minute, it looks like the federal government of the United States does not have its fiscal house in order. So we think we have better investment opportunities. And they buy, for example, companies, businesses in the United States, actually all over the world, instead of purchasing what at one time was considered the lowest risk investment, namely treasury securities, your treasury bills, your notes and bonds. Ultimately, there's a day of reckoning, and what that means is over time, interest rates will creep back up, and the percentage of the United States budget that goes to interest, instead of being at 6%, will go to 10%, then 15, and then 25. And it'll happen fairly quickly. It most surely is going to happen over the next 15 years. And when that happens, you are going to have inflation, and everything's going to hit the fan because at that point, the federal government is forced to cut spending. They should have been doing it all along, but they're not. They're avoiding the problem like a plague. They're the so-called political, what I call the political establishment elite, but they're not the best, they're not the brightest at all. And they certainly do not want to deal with this problem, whether they're called Democrats or Republicans. Well, the American people are waking up. Slowly but surely, they're waking up and saying, enough. We know what you're doing to our children in terms of the college loans and the cost of college. You see, when the government increases subsidies, what do colleges do? They increase the tuition. I've seen it at even junior colleges, or what's now called community colleges, are a cheap way to get the first 2 years of your college education. So if you don't have good grades, you haven't applied yourself in high school, in other words, you're not really scholarship material and can't get into a good college, what many students do is go the first 2 years to a community college to save money. Well, in the last 20 years, the tuition has more than doubled. And I think the quality has gone down. That's my candid opinion. So you're not getting more for your money, but you're paying more for those courses. It's still, by far, the cheapest route, by far. You'll pay probably somewhere between 10 to 15% of the cost if you were to go to a so-called senior university, a four-year university that is one of your better colleges. So instead of paying, and round numbers, roughly $160 for a three-credit course at a community college, you would pay roughly $1,500 or $1,600 at a four-year college. And if it is one of these better schools, it could be easily $2,000 for that course. Inflation in terms of college tuition and the books as well is rampant. It exceeds even the inflation in healthcare. That's how bad it is. Now, I've sort of touched on a number of subjects. I want to relate it to the news. Today in Europe, and to a lesser extent in the United States, the American people are very much concerned about terrorist attacks. There's a heightened sensitivity to it. Now, your chances of getting killed by a terrorist are less than getting hit by lightning. So why there's a lot of news coverage, you need to keep it in perspective. Unfortunately, many people depend on the government to protect them, and the government does a terrible job at it. They simply can't protect you. That's the sad truth. That's why it's absolutely critical to control our borders, control people entering this country on visas, whether it's a tourist visa, a business, or student visa. And make sure they go home per what we say on the visa. How good is the visa good for? 90 days, half a year, depending on your purpose. You must control your borders, both those that cross illegally across the U.S.-Mexican border, as well as those that fly in and hopefully leave when their visa expires. By law, if you don't honor our visas, you're barred from the country for a year or more, depending on how long you overstay. It's serious to not honor those visas, even though it's estimated up to 40% of the illegal immigration problem is due to people overstaying their visas. And we keep hearing about, you know, a better system to make sure that they leave, a metric, biometric, usually a picture of your eyes, to make sure it's that person, that's the person that came in is actually leaving. So this directly leads me to Donald Trump. Just before the show started, I was listening to a talk radio show, and Donald Trump was the guest, and he was talking. And it's a popular talk show. It's the Mike Savage Show. And I, if I can, listen to Michael Savage. He has a point of view, and he is a Trump supporter. Now, I want to be fair to him. What's happening between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz? There has been a lot of news. Actually, I call it a big distraction. And the last part of it is the National Enquirer reported that Ted Cruz has been having an affair with five women. Very light on the names of the women, but I caution you before you dismiss it, they have broken some major scandals, such as the Monica Lewinsky scandal with Bill Clinton, as well as, and I keep forgetting his name, I know it's John Edwards. He was having an affair that was running, and looked like might even get the nomination for the Democratic Party until this broke. But Savage makes the point, and I agree with him. Anyone can accuse anyone of something. But if they do it in writing, in like a newspaper where they're quoted, or on television, or in the public domain, if you will, they're liable and can be sued. So I'm a Ted Cruz supporter, in the sense I would vote for him. I'm not endorsing him. And I'm adding Donald Trump back to the list, because I'm of the opinion, and other people are of the opinion, that a Trump-Cruz ticket could very well mean a landslide victory for the Republican Party. And I say that because if you add up the votes that Trump has been getting, as well as Cruz has been getting, it's 60% plus. They have the most delegates between them. And see, what I think is going to happen is, come the convention, Donald Trump is going to be a little bit short of the magic number 1,237 that you need to get, you need on the first ballot to get nominated. You need 50% plus one. And if you, that's the rule, and it's been that way since Abraham Lincoln. It's not a new rule, but everyone understands it. You only get the nomination if you have a majority. And I think Donald Trump will be in the neighborhood of roughly 1,150. In other words, he's going to be short. How short? I don't know. And it's really an educated guess on my part. I think Ted Cruz will have probably about 850. So if you add the two together they will have around 2,000 delegates. And you have a little over 2,500. You multiply 1,236 by two, that's the total number of delegates. So they're both going to be short. There's a move afoot amongst the Republican Party, and I think these people are out of their minds. Crazy, delusional. But they're part of the Republican establishment that they don't want Cruz, they don't want Trump, so they're going to say, you're disqualified. You didn't get the 1,237, so you can't be the nominee. You need 1,257. What are they overlooking? These geniuses in Washington, D.C., the so-called elite. And I said this on an earlier show last week. What do you think Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are going to do if they're very close to the number? One of them will be. I don't know if it's Cruz or Trump. I don't have a crystal ball, because people that have crystal balls end up eating it as glass. But one of those candidates is going to be very near, if not over. One might get it going away, and right now it looks like Donald Trump. But if you combine their combined delegate count after all the primaries are over, and that means early June, it looks like Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, or both, will be on the ticket. And I've recommended we have a Trump-Cruz ticket. That's why I wish both Cruz and Trump would cool it in the name-calling Whether they're responsible for the National Enquirer story, who knows where it came from? Right now, the rumor is it came out of the Rubio camp. The problem is, if you're going to print this type of story, you better have your sources lined up. Because if you get it wrong, you're going to be sued. Not right away, but you are. Not by the public figure, whether it's Ted Cruz or whoever, but by the other names. When you accuse someone of having an affair with five people, and all five people say, not me, yet you say you're one of them, you better have the proof. You better have photographs. Ideally, you better have videos. Does it happen? You better believe it does happen. And politicians are human like anyone else. And yes, over time, they might have marital problems and then get back together and move on with their lives, or it continues. I have no information what the situation is with Ted Cruz. I doubt it, but he's a man, he's human, and you do get people that will tempt him. Some very beautiful women probably have already tempted him. So unless you're really happily married and avoid those temptations, you can, in a moment of passion, get in trouble. I don't think it happened, but it's now out there in talk radio. It's been the subject of conversation for the last several days. Last week it started. What I'm trying to do is say to both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, stop it. Stop it. If your objective is to get the nomination and win, get back to talking about the issues. Forget about calling each other names. I suggest you stop tweeting Mr. Trump. It's not helping you. Stick to interviews on television and your stump speech. You seem to get in trouble late at night when you tweet. It's not becoming of a presidential candidate. I was going to say give it up for Lent. I would say give it up if you're serious about becoming president of the United States. That is not a habit I want a president to be engaged in. I don't tweet. I had set up an account. I can't stand it. Some people live by it. I don't. Most people have better things to do with their lives than tweet each other. What they're doing every single minute, nobody really cares. And you run a danger of, especially if you're a candidate for any office, ruin your credibility. And I think that's what's slowly happening to Donald Trump. In this case, I think he's his own worst enemy. Give it up. Find something more productive, more entertaining, more pleasurable. Tweeting is not my idea of having fun. It is, however, for some people, ways to create mischief. So both individuals should move on, and I think in the next 30 to 60 days have a meeting, because ultimately it's going to be clear to everybody who has the most delegates. And Donald Trump has the most delegates. He has nearly 300 more than Ted Cruz. That's why I don't see a pathway to victory for Ted Cruz. Oh, he's going to get close. He could very well break 1,000, but what's that rule? 1,237. 1,000 doesn't cut it. I think he'll get 850, at most 950. That's a lot. What I'm saying is we need a united front to defeat whoever the Democratic Party nominee is. And I'm not a Republican. Consider this free advice. And I used to be in the financial advice business, and clients can take your advice or they can ignore it. And I've had clients do both. And I always say, it's your money, your decision. I'm giving you the alternatives, and you can either take it or leave it, because it's your money. It's not my money. In this case, it's Donald Trump and Ted Cruz to determine, are they serious? See, the advantage of a Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, ticket where Donald Trump, for example, would be at the top, and the reason I think it would be unbeatable, is Cruz would attract those that have been in the conservative movement, and I am one of them, as well as Tea Party movement people. In other words, the majority of the Republican Party. And Donald Trump would attract businesses, business owners, as well as Democrats, because he is, or was, very much a liberal Democrat, who on a number of issues now talks like a conservative. But he's zeroed in on the important issue of immigration, which is a jobs issue. First and foremost, immigration is a job issue. Second is a crime issue, because many of these illegal immigrants commit crimes, serious crimes, murder, rape, assault, hit and run, robberies, beatings. And I'm not painting with a broad brush. There is just a criminal element within the illegal immigration community. And those people need to be put in prison or deported or both. The American people know that this is hurting their opportunities, as well as the opportunities for their sons and daughters and grandchildren. And it crosses party lines, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, liberal, conservative, libertarian, or whatever. The American people want the laws of these lands, in particular immigration laws, enforced. And that's why Donald Trump came out of nowhere and is now the front runner, and I think will be the Republican Party nominee, despite the fact that the Republican establishment, the leadership of the Republican Party, and their advisors, and their consultants, and their media fellow travelers, they don't want Donald Trump, and they don't want Ted Cruz. And I need to remind some of these Republicans, and I'm not a Republican, but I was for a long time, the Republican Party has not been a conservative party for over 85 years. It is very much has been, starting with Herbert Hoover, a big government party. It's a liberal progressive party. It's not a conservative party. That's why I've given up on them. 10 years ago, I said, this is, enough is enough. They're not fiscally responsible. One of the first tests I have, it's sort of an acid test. You know, you got to meet this one. Are you fiscally responsible? And the answer is the Republican Party, when they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency, were running major deficits, worse than Ronald Reagan's deficit when he didn't control the House and the Senate. In other words, when Republicans had control of the whole thing, they blew a wide hole in the budgets year in, year out. I know we were at war, but we expanded into Iraq, and that has not been proven to be a good decision. I'm not trying to second guess here. I was on the fence. But you have to play with the cards that you're dealt with. And we were attacked on September 11, 2001. And yes, we needed to retaliate against those that killed nearly 3,000 Americans, as well as dozens from other nationalities, primarily in the World Trade Center buildings, but also in the Pentagon and the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. We were attacked, and we went after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And we did have them on the run, but we were unsuccessful in capturing their leader. And now today, what happens? We have the Islamic State that's trying to provoke a war. They want a redo. They want the United States and Europe to send troops into Syria and Iraq so they could kill them and we can kill them. They want a war. They're deliberately being provocative. That's why for the last 2 years, going on 2 years, remember the Islamic State officially did not come into existence until the end of June of 2014. We're coming up on the second anniversary. Now, they've had other names before. I'm not saying they were not active, but most people have never heard of them until then. And we've had this running debate as to what their name is. Well, they want to be called the Islamic State. I'm calling them the Islamic State. And yes, they're radical Islamic jihadists. It's religious based, and the religion is they're Muslims. And these are fanatics that believe in a fundamentalist, literalist version of the Quran. And they're attracting people all over the world that share these beliefs. They're militant Salafist, and that comes out of Saudi Arabia. And remember, of the 19 attackers on 9/11, 12 were from Saudi Arabia. It's the Wahhabi sect. That's the name you hear in the press. They don't like that name. They like to be called Salafist. And they're different sects, just like in Christianity. They're the Methodists, Presbyterians, Baptists, Church of England, Episcopalian, Roman Catholic, Mormon, there are a lot of different sects of Christianity, and yes, there are a lot of sects of Islam. And what we're dealing with are the radical Islamists, jihadists. Jihadists means struggle. These are the so-called warriors that are trying to have a war, a battle with us, and the way they're going about it is now attacking Europe, and they specifically targeted Americans. It's not an accident that four Americans were killed. The terminal, the two bombs went off. One was at a counter. I believe it was Delta. I could be wrong. But you have Delta, American Airlines, and United have check-in counters right next to each other. One bomb went off there. Another bomb diagonally went off in front of Starbucks. The reason they chose those counters, they were trying to kill Americans as well as Europeans, anyone flying to the United States. And unfortunately, I think the number now is 16 people were killed. 14 plus two of the bombers were killed, which is 16, at the airport, and 20 were killed at the subway station. Over 270 are injured. A little less than 100 are still in the hospital, many seriously burned. And I would not be surprised if, unfortunately, the number of dead climbs. I hope that doesn't happen. But when you're dealing with people that were seriously burned, it's touch and go. So I don't think we've heard the last out of what happened in Brussels, Belgium. My point is this. What is going to be the United States' response? And that largely depends on who is going to be the next president of the United States. And Donald Trump has made very, very clear he's going to bomb them. Now, I think he needs to talk to some experts. I'm all for increasing the number of missions and sorties sky high. But you need intelligence as to where they are. You need people on the ground. And ultimately, you need people to go block by block, building by building, room by room to root these people out and kill them. That is the only way you're going to destroy the Islamic State. Bombing them from 40 to 50,000 feet is not going to do it. Oh, it'll kill a lot of them, but it's not going to eliminate them as a serious threat. Obviously, you need to take out the leadership, the command and control centers, but they're fighting a guerrilla war. They're fighting an insurgency. They are spreading out, and they are embedded, if you will, or with civilians. The United States needs to declare war against the Islamic State. We have a president that won't say radical Islamic jihadist terrorist. Can't put those words in that order. So nothing is going to happen under this president. He's stalling. He's not a leader. He's one of these guys that licks his finger and puts it up in the air and see which way the wind's blowing. Well, he has that right. The American people do not want to put 30 to 50,000 troops in Syria and Iraq to take out the Islamic State. Neither do I. Why? Who needs to kill these people? Whose problem is this? I'll tell you whose problem it is. Sunni Arabs. They're the ones that funded the Islamic State, provided its weapons, mainly as a counter to the Iraqi Shiites. Remember, this is fundamentally a religious war between the Sunnis and the Shia, where the Shia are Iraqis and Persians. The Iraqis are Arab Shias, and the Persians are Shias as well. And that's why, for example, Hezbollah, which is supported by the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is Shia, is supporting the Assad regime. So it's the Sunnis that created this monster. It's the Sunnis that have to destroy it. And that means Saudi Arabia and Turkey. Saudi Arabia is Arab Sunni. Turkey is Turks Sunni. They need to go into both Syria and Iraq, as well as Jordan, by the way, and destroy these bastards. It'll probably take a year or two. You need to get organized. But we need an American president that has leadership capabilities to get these countries to do it. And they're not going to do it as long as the United States, primarily, with some NATO support, but primarily these missions are being executed, if you will, by United States Air Force pilots, primarily F-16s. That's not going to win. You can't win a war by continually bombing. You have to send in infantry to root out and kill these people. And because it's a religious war, it's really not our fight. The only reason we should be involved is they're killing our citizens, as well as Europeans. So we need to arm twist both Turkey, who is a member of NATO, and Saudi Arabia. They have F-16s. They have tanks. They have artillery. They have troops. They're going to have to invade Syria and Iraq and kill these bastards. The United States can provide intelligence, logistics support, and we'll sell them equipment. But ultimately, it is Arab Sunnis as well as Turkish Sunnis that need to kill the Islamic State, which are Sunnis. And the sooner this happens, the better. But it's not going to happen unless we elect a Republican president that has the leadership capabilities to go after him. And both Ted Cruz and Donald Trump support that goal. I'm afraid, though, that one or both of them think the U.S. troops should be sent. I don't support that. The Saudis have an army and an air force. So do the Turks. Use it. It's their interest because the Islamic State wants to destroy the royal family, the Sauds in Saudi Arabia, as well as going after the Turks. It's their mess. It's their neighborhood. They know the language. They know the culture. They certainly know the religion. They know what they're up against. It's time to clean house. And we need a president that will tell them that straightforwardly in private and to get their act together and do it. And I also forgot the Jordan as well. If you look at a map, you'll see why. They're right next to Iraq and Syria. That's why. That's where the core problem is. That will be the foreign affairs issue of this election. That's why I'm covering it today. And the two candidates that I think have their heads screwed on right on this are Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. It's not the Democratic Party. It's certainly not the incompetent former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She is largely responsible for this mess, including together with President Obama, by pulling out so he could keep a campaign promise. Hasn't turned out very well, has it, Mr. President? Cut and run Obama. That's what he's all about. We're not going to see leadership out of President Obama. He is a lame duck. He's slow walking this. His only interest is to have a legacy, and that legacy requires that Hillary Clinton be elected. And it's going to take the combined forces, if you will, of Trump supporters and Cruz supporters, no matter what their political philosophy is, to come together and unite with the common purpose of defeating Hillary Clinton. And if I were them, I would go after Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, including Bernie Sanders, and stop sniping at each other. It is only hurting both of you, and it's giving ammunition to the Republican establishment that's trying to stop Trump. Now, they're calling it Stop Trump, but what it's really about is to stop Trump and Cruz. That's why a lot of former Republicans, now independents, as well as Republicans, are not happy with the leadership in Washington, D.C. They're disgusted, and if they try to pull this garbage, they're going to have their heads handed to them. They haven't figured out that Cruz and Trump together will have probably over 2,000 delegates. Why do you think 2,000 delegates out of roughly 2,500, in other words, 80% or more, are going to do if you try to pull some shenanigans and changing the rules and saying these people obviously don't have the support, you need somebody else? They're going to have a revolt, and they should. It's revolting. It's disgusting. It's actually very stupid on the part of the Republican establishment, but that's been their problem. That's why you have this revolt. It's the sheer stupidity of the Republican Party. They think they can ignore the will of their voter base, and they can't. And now it's coming back. Chickens have come home to roost. And all the people in Washington, the consultants, the advisors, the people on the staffs of the RNC, the ones that are connected with the leadership, they're the ones that the American people are revolting against. And their candidates, whether they like it or not, are Donald J. Trump and Ted Cruz. And if I'm right, Trump will be the Republican nominee for president, and Ted Cruz will be the vice president candidate, and they both will win, and they will win in a landslide because they're right on the key issues. And as a team, I think it's a dream team, but it's a nightmare for the liberal progressives in the Republican Party. And it's more than a nightmare for the Democrats that are largely completely liberal progressive and going off the cliff into socialism. I've caught you up as to what's happening. We'll hear more about, and I'll give you updates on, the final list of fatalities in Brussels. I hope it stays at 34, but there are just too many people in burn units and seriously wounded. I think you're going to see more deaths, unfortunately. And we need action, and it's going to take time to stop the Islamic State. But we also need to control our borders, and the Europeans need to control theirs, and they need to rethink what they're doing. We have a limited amount of time to reverse the invasion of the United States by 30 to 50 million illegal aliens. That can be reversed. And I hope Donald Trump and Ted Cruz live up to their promises. I still have some doubts, reservations. But you only are going to have one or two choices. You can either vote for the Democratic candidate or you can vote for the Republican candidate. A third party candidate right now will get less than 1%. The Green Party could get a little bit more, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I think the majority of the American people have had enough with the elite establishment of both parties. They are looking for fundamental change. They're demanding. They're not asking. They're demanding change. They're demanding leadership. And they'll vote for those candidates that, to them, looks like could provide that leadership. I think the issue will be between Hillary, in terms of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, the issue will be trust. The American people don't trust Hillary Clinton, even if they're going to vote for her. That is going to be a big problem for her, especially once the FBI director finally decides to make a criminal referral to the Justice Department. Based on current news reports, they're apparently going to be interviewing Hillary Clinton's immediate aides that were involved in this mishandling of classified information, as well as Hillary Clinton this month. So I would hope by late May, early June, that we see the FBI director finally submitting to the Department of Justice a criminal referral. And at that point, the ball is in the Department of Justice. It's up to them and their attorneys and the Attorney General to decide whether or not to go forward with a criminal indictment and impanel a federal grand jury. I'm not holding my breath. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio. WordPress.com